everyone, and welcome to minute 120 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today in order to finish off this week is Heather Baxendale of the Word of Hellmouth podcast. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Hello! Thank you for having me back. I'm excited to be here again.
I would shout at you in French, but I don't really understand it, so I'll just...
Well, I mean, you know, for most people that don't understand French, they wouldn't know that you were messing it up at all.
That's true also. That's true. So, minute 120 begins with John checking his ammo again and ends with the standoff beginning. So this is a great episode. I mean, we finished things off yesterday with John starting to make his way towards the vault, and he's got, you know, he's got his pistol, and he's got his MP5 that he stole from the dead Uli, you know, from upstairs. So this minute actually starts with him, you know, looking at the guns and, you know, taking out the magazines of each of them and then taking out the bullets. And it's great because, you know, we see that he holds out his hand and we can see two bullets in his hand. Okay, basically, he got one bullet out of each of them, which, first of all, I think is just amazing because, you know, in movies, they just, you know, will shoot guns and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. It doesn't matter how many bullets they have until they run out, you know, if they run out. And, you know, I don't know. Have you ever shot an automatic weapon or a semi-automatic weapon?
I own a semi-automatic. Actually, I own both semi-automatic weapons.
So what are the chances, if you were shooting, that you would have one bullet left?
it could happen, and in fact it does happen on occasion.
No, but you're usually at a shooting range, not around the building. No,
not around the building. But we do a lot of our family does a lot of target shooting up in the woods too, and we do lots of different things. So sometimes we do kind of lose track. Mm-hmm. And I would say in this scenario, that's completely plausible. And like you said, too, a lot of movies, you have the endless ammo feature, which, yep. You know, I'm fine with in most scenarios. It's okay if the movie, you know, if that's the rules of their universe, like the Legolas never runs out of arrows in his
that's
bow.
That's right. Exactly.
That's fine. Yeah. If that's the rules of your universe, that's fine. But I do like it when they have the realism with combat effects such as this. John Wick's another movie that does a really, really good job of that. It taps you into the reality of it more, and it definitely raises the stakes too.
Yes.
And you know, it definitely is convenient too to go, okay, well, we have to get this shot and we have to do this right. But it works, and it can, and as far as like you said, you know, plausibility goes, it's very possible that he had only one left and didn't know, or two bullets left and
again,
didn't know.
In the pistol I can understand it. In the MP5 less, but it's, first of all, it's very telling, the fact, I mean, this shot of John holding the two bullets in his hand is essentially the explanation to the audience as to why the scriptwriter or the director, they decided to use MP5s, okay, because they both are using the same 9mm bullets. You know, if they were using an AR-15 or they're using a Kalashnikov or something like that, they'd have different size bullets. So in order for this whole ploy of what's going to happen, you know, at the beginning of next week to work, you have to have two identical bullets that can be interchangeable between the two different guns that, you know, that McLean happens to be carrying.
Which is really hard to do, but it's also clever, and it's something they put together at the beginning. And the MP5 is a reasonable weapon for the villains to be carrying too.
Yeah, well, it became popular because of movies. This is one of the first movies that uses MP5s. You know, in just about every terrorist movie nowadays, you know, after Die Hard, most are using MP5s, not because they need the switchable bullets, but you know, I guess they said, oh, it looks cool in when John McClane's holding it, so.
It does look cool when John McClane's holding it, and if you can fire fast enough, I mean the bullets do go off quite quickly, so it's a lot of fun. They're fun guns when they're used appropriately.
Yes. I've never shot an MP5. Have you ever shot an MP5?
Yes. They're lightweight. There's not a lot of recoil. Again, it depends on how fast your trigger finger is and that kind of thing. Also, too, him running out of bullets, he would definitely know that he was either on that. He would definitely know if he was down to nothing. Having one left in there is kind of
bananas. Well, that's my point. That's my point.
That's definitely bananas. It's not possible, but...
Right. I mean, I've shot pistols and I've shot Uzis also, which also Uzis also use 9mm. So the chances in a pistol, it makes more sense that you will have one, that you would know you have one bullet left, especially if you're counting. But, you know, in a machine gun, it's generally not going to happen. Especially in all of the chaos. Well, think about it. What was the last time that he shot? Do you remember earlier this week when he shot? I think the last time he shot was up at the chopper.
Wasn't that the last,
nope.
the last string of bullets? No, it was at the window.
So what are the chances that he would shoot at the window? He was sporadically shooting at the window, both, you know, swinging right and left, back and forth and everything like that. What are the odds that he would have one bullet left?
It would be minimal. It's really, really small likelihood.
And forget about that. Let's even go crazier. What are the odds that in both guns that he was using, he would have one bullet left?
Bizarro. Again, yeah. and almost now that you're bringing it up, it just seems the scene moves so quickly. And again, this is breaking it down by the minute. So we're looking at all of the very specific details. But this is one of those movies that's really, really tight in all of the details, too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a strange moment to have and not necessarily necessary either. Having just one left in the Beretta or two left in the Beretta would have been just fine.
Yeah.
One in the chamber, yeah. It would have been fine. But yeah.
But the plot needs him to have one in each. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know,
well, at the end of the day, that's usually what happens, is it has to work for the movie to work.
Correct. But, yeah, for sure. I'm not complaining. You know, again, I love this movie. So these are not complaints. These are, you know, these are pangs of joy.
Well, I mean, I do that too. Whenever I watch movies that I love that I will watch 200 times, there's no way you can watch a movie that many times and not find flaws, certain Correct. Flaws here or there. Same mm-hmm. thing with TV shows, that kind of stuff. And I guess probably using the Star Wars viewership is the best example I can think of, is even though there are, you know, the toxic Star Wars fans, it's you embrace all of those things. Part of loving the thing that you love is loving it in spite of its
yes.
flaws.
Correct.
So I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. But this movie, unless you're really looking for it, you don't find many flaws.
No.
So it's kind of like, ooh, why did they do that? It's right. It's more interesting than anything.
Right. Well, again, this is a flaw, not for the plot. It's a flaw that you wouldn't necessarily have a bullet left in each weapon. That's the little flaw here. But what's really cool also is if you're looking at the second seven when he's holding the bullets, you can see once again that his watch, you know, is turned inside out. You know, on the inside of his wrist, but you can also still see the writing on his arm from when he wrote down the names of the terrorists and things like that.
You can.
Which is really, really cool that they let us see that here.
That's a nice little detail. Until I paused it and slowed it down that much, I noticed that there was stuff on his arm, but it just looked like maybe smut or whatever from all the explosions.
Well, there's blood on there too, so, you know.
Well, there's lots of blood. He's covered in blood. This is full primal mode right now.
Right.
We're barefoot, just in pants. He's practically Tarzan with an automatic rifle, rifle.
And then he like clenches the two bullets in his fist, and then looks up at the camera basically, and you see the look on his face. What am I gonna do? How am I gonna do this? You know, And then the music changes.
Holiday music, right?
That's right. We get holiday music, and then he looks over and he sees the Christmas tree with sparks flying all around it, which is also really cool. You know, you can see these sparks. You know,
it's very, very cool.
Still
Christmassy. It's adding the dire moment along with the Christmas theme.
Right.
Which is what makes this a full on Christmas movie.
Yes.
This is an LA Confidential where we're stretching it. This is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. And then he sees all these boxes of, you see like these presents And then you see holiday decorations. Now, then the camera like jumps in, and we get close-ups of, you know, the holiday tape and ribbons and stuff like that. But you can also see one of the packages. Now, did you notice that there's actually a name on the package with an address?
I did not. I just noticed it was sitting on the edge.
Okay. So it's
the only one that's wrapped, and it draws attention to itself.
Yes, it draws attention to itself. It's actually, it's the one that's not wrapped. It's just in brown. You know, there's a red package, and there's a colorful package with wrapping paper. And there's one that has, you know, like it already has the tape on it saying season's greetings. But then there's another one in the upper left-hand corner, which is just a brown one, which has like a ribbon on it. And you can see, the name is Mr. M. Papik. Okay. It's I can't read. It's 1843 something Boulevard. And I can't read where it actually is. It's 90213-45. So if it's 90213, it means that it's probably close to Beverly Hills, because that's 90210.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's the only reason I would even have any clue.
Exactly. About. Me too. Yeah. Me too. And I know that when you see a name in a movie like this, that means that this name has significance. Okay. Do you know who M. Papik is?
I do not. I was thinking, for me, I can still barely see it on my screen, but I when you said it, I thought empathic, as an empath, rather than empath. Okay, so no, I do not.
Okay, so he is in the art department of the movie. Okay,
that's cool.
His actual role in the movie. Well, first of all, he has tons of credit on IMDb. He has 4 credits as additional crew. You know, most of the time he's the armor or the weapon specialist or things like that, which sort of makes sense that he would be there. Okay, in Die Hard he is the weapon specialist. All right, and he's also he's the property master.
All right, well then he wrote himself in.
More, yes. Yes. So, sorry. In this movie, he was the assistant property master. In Die Hard 2, he's the property master. You know, and then The Last Boy Scout, and he's got tons of he has tons of McTiernan movies also that he's in, because he was in Predator also. He played the property gun master there. And,
he was in Predator 2? I'm curious, because at the end of Predator 2, we've got the whole... Okay, the whole inspiration for Aliens versus Predators.
No. He's just in Predator. Okay, so he is basically both a armorer and the property master, and so therefore it makes sense that he would put his name on something like this for at least him to say to his friends, "Hey, I'm in Die Hard." You know,
it's kind of neat. It really is. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like that. Yeah, I think that's cool.
And
I wonder if that's his real address. We should go drive there and find out.
If you can go to LA, go ahead. You know, if you're in LA, go ahead. But I can't read it, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I still can't even read the name, and I've rewound it, moved it a couple times. So
that's interesting, because we're both looking at the. I mean, assuming you're looking at the clips I gave you.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
I think you need glasses.
I do actually. I'm almost legally blind.
And now we understand why you cannot. Understand what is written there.
I was actually complaining about blurry vision all day today, so
I wonder why. So, yeah. So that's why you cannot see Mr. M. Papik. Okay, now what's even more interesting is that his son, whose name is Nick Papik, okay, is also in the movie industry. Okay, and he, if I remember correctly, is he's also in the art department. Okay, he's also the assistant armorer in many movies.
Cool.
He's an actor in one movie, in a movie called Naked Betrayal. He was a card player.
All right.
the picture makes it look like it's either porn or soft porn. Yeah. You know, but
by the name, the implication is there.
Yes. But unfortunately, he was actually killed on set. okay, while they were filming the movie The Kingdom. Okay, have you seen the movie The Kingdom?
Yeah.
You know, that's the one that takes place, I think, in Saudi Arabia. It's got an amazing cast. It's directed by Peter Berg. It's with Jamie Foxx, yeah. Chris Cooper, Jennifer Garner, Jason Bateman. Yes. I love Jason Bateman in this movie because you don't expect him there, you know.
No.
Jeremy Piven's in it, Richard Jenkins, Kyle Chandler. So he was actually, I'll read what it says on IMDb, that he was tragically killed on the set of the film The Kingdom when the Gator all-terrain vehicle he was driving lost power and collided with an SUV. He was taken to, they were filming in Scottsdale, Arizona. He was taken to the hospital there, but succumbed to severe head injuries within 3 hours of the accident. So, you know, that's quite sad. That's something. But very. I'm trying to figure out, like, why, you know, if he's the armor, so why is he, you know, driving around, you know, in the middle of the movie? I don't know. Maybe it wasn't while they were filming or something like that.
Maybe not. I don't remember hearing. It's a really good movie. I haven't watched it in a long time, which you've inspired me to want to watch.
Yeah, well, it's inspired me now to want to watch it again too. So.
Yeah. That's usually you hear something about that though, that there's a death of some kind surrounding the making of a movie, even if it's accident.
Yeah, but also this movie came out in 2007, so. You know, it has been 15 years since this happened.
Thanks for reminding me that I'm getting so much older.
No.
I appreciate it.
Heather, as I always say, you know, it's better to get older because the only other alternative in life is not to get older. And we don't want to not get older.
No.
You know, so there you go. We just have to deal with it.
Suck it up.
It's something I'm willing to deal with, you know.
For the most part, me too.
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants to be a teenager again anyway? Come on.
No. I'll take the joint pain and the short-term memory any day. Do not want to be a teenager again. Not even with the knowledge that I have now. Don't want to even go back with that.
Correct.
Nope.
Yeah. Completely. There are too many movies that tried doing that, you know. But no thanks. I'll pass on those. So, you know, after we see this, we hear I love the way that it's cluing us into what's going to happen, you know, next week. You know, obviously we don't get to see today what's going to happen with it, but it gives us a little bit of an inkling, you know, yeah, especially once you know.
Fun foreshadowing.
Exactly. Especially once you know. And so that's a lot of fun. And then the scene changes and we get to see, we're back to Argyle. We see the limo slowly creeping through the garage, which is great. He's driving like really, really slow. And the question is, okay, you know, we know that he saw Theo in the truck and stuff like that, you know, but he's somehow able to be really, really quiet by doing this the way that he's doing it. You know,
I like that they make the car almost seem like it's sneaking up like
yes,
a ninja.
Exactly.
Even though it's the only car that's moving in the garage, it's not a small vehicle either. There's nothing subtle about a limo.
And it's not making noise, you know.
No, because we don't hear it because we hear the ominous music.
Well, I don't know I don't know if I would call it ominous music. It's ominous. I would say fun music, the way that they do it.
Yeah, it's borderline funny slash like almost a play on this should be a scary moment.
Exactly.
Or an intense moment. Yeah, it's teasing it a bit, which is fun.
Yeah.
And the whole scene is really, really fun.
Yeah. And then, you know, then they show the shot from the window, basically from Argyle's perspective. You see the little ambulance backing up, which what's really funny is you know, you don't see the truck anymore. You just see the ambulance. No. Like he pulled out of the truck, but now he's in a completely different area. He somehow, you know, drove around to there. So he starts, you know, backing up there, and then they give us a close-up of Theo inside, you know, and he, you know, puts it in the park, and then he looks over to his left and sees that Argyle has, you know, put the pedal to the metal.
It's so great.
And,
I like this whole sequence anyway. First of all, I like car sequences where they show the perspective of the driver. It's one of my favorite ways to see that shot. I enjoy it. Actually, when I'm watching race car drivers as well. It's fantastic. And it really puts you in the moment too. But just when it switches back to Theo and you see the front of that limo coming at
right.
you.
And Theo is scared out of his wits. You can see he's got such a great expression on his face as to how scared he is. You know, it goes to show once again that Theo is, you know, all talk.
And this is a legitimate crash, too. I mean, obviously, yeah. this is a practical fact. They actually smashed the limo into the van.
Of course.
But I appreciate that they didn't do the extra, because, I mean, what you see a lot, too, is if a car hits another car in movies, it's like the unlimited ammo rule or kicking down the door.
That the car always explodes.
It explodes!
There you go.
Yeah, or there's fire. There's just always fire. And that's not realistic.
Right.
It's fun, though. I don't complain, because I enjoy explosions. But I also appreciate the realism and letting it do the damage that it did here.
Yeah, for sure. And I also love how we see Theo and we hear the screeching of the tires. You know, and then we get to see the limo charging right at him. And Theo closes the door and, you know, tries to brace himself for impact with the way that he's doing it. And then we see the limo colliding with the ambulance, causing a lot of damage to both of them. You know,
the whole thing reminds me of like a rhino that sees something it doesn't like and is just like, I'm coming to get you.
Right.
And there's really not a lot of space or time to react to it. So it's just all doom.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it really is. And then Argo like quickly jumps out of the car and runs over to the ambulance, you know, to the driver's window of the ambulance and just like punches Theo. Who succumbs so quickly? Just one little punch.
Soft chin.
That's right.
We'll do you in every time.
That's right. And then we see, you know, Theo just lying on the side there. After, you know, he's down for the count.
Broken glasses too.
Yeah, yeah. Broken glasses, and I mean, if you notice when the limo hits the ambulance, one of the windows in the back of the ambulance also just goes flying. Yeah.
Well, I guess it does. Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah. And our girl is just very proud of himself here.
He should be. He's done a big thing. I mean, he's done some hero action here.
He's got like a huge smile on his face, but he you know, then he like shakes his hand because he's, you know, his fist hurts him now. From punching Theo.
He knocked a dude cold. And from the way he did it and his reaction to it, it feels like it's probably the first time he's ever done anything like that.
Yeah, probably.
Certainly smashed the vehicle into another vehicle, but I feel like it was the first time he's ever hit somebody like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And then
it's satisfying.
Yeah, for sure. And then the shot changes again, and we see Eddie, who's, you know, fiddling around with one of the bags of the bearer bonds. And then Hans pushes Christoph to go on his way, and Christoph runs holding one of the bags of the bear buns as he starts running out of the vault, right? And it's just really funny because we get a little shot of Christoph. He's still wearing his goggles. You know?
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, he is!
Yeah, he forgot to take them off. But and then as he's running, he just like, quickly grabs them and throws them off. And then he comes out the gate by the vault and then gets smashed in the face by John. John uses his
the butt of the gun.
That's right. And he goes down really quickly. Now, I love the fact that there are two of the terrorists that actually survive and they both get knocked out within, you know, 30 seconds of one another.
Yeah,
you know,
they're both pretty good knockouts.
That's
too.
Right. They don't try and spread it out at all.
Nope.
You know, it's like, okay, why not? We'll just knock them out. You know, but and as like Christoph goes, he goes flying to the side, and then his bag flies out also, and the bag apparently is open, and so all the bearer bonds that he's holding also, you know, slide across the floor. So yeah, it's pretty cool the way that happens.
It's a good,
you know,
yeah,
we
it's
see,
a good shot.
We,
it's a really
yeah,
good shot.
We see all the sparks flying and stuff like that. And then the shot goes back and shows Hans and Eddie as they're loading up the trolley, and they apparently hear something, and they both look in the direction of the camera.
That's because they hear a battle cry.
Yeah.
I think John McClane has had quite enough of their BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
This makes me think, too, there's another sequence like this in Troy, when Achilles comes and starts just yelling, Hector! Like, Hector! Whenever my brother and I just randomly get annoyed with each other, we'll just text each other, Hector! Instead of actually yelling.
Well, now you should change it and start saying Hans. Hans!
And yes!
Hans.
Another great moment where that it's the same feeling of, okay, I've had enough, I am ready to end you, let's have this out.
Yeah, basically. And Hans and Eddie are both looking at us into the camera, you know, trying to figure out why John is calling out his name. You know, he's a little shocked here. And then they give us a great silhouette of John. You know, as he's like walking towards the area, we don't see, you know, he's completely dark. Like around him, it's lit. Yep. You know, we see the sparks flying around him from the back, you know, and the we see the Christmas tree behind him also and stuff like that. And Hans gets pretty smart. He just like pulls out a gun and then holds Holly's arm and pulls her closer to him. You know, and
yeah. Speed hasn't happened yet. We don't shoot the hostage.
No, not yet. pop quiz hot shot. And I love how Eddie is holding his hands up, like, the way that he is.
Yeah, like, I'm not doing anything.
Don't shoot me. Yep. Don't shoot me.
I'm done.
Even though that's what's going to happen. So, and that's pretty much how the minute ends. We get another shot from behind Eddie and Hans, and we see John moving towards them, you know, from afar with all the sparks and light behind him and stuff like that. And
it's a really, really great shot. Yeah. It's a great hero shot.
Yeah.
If they would have put a poster out of just that too, and literally just said Die Hard, that would have been enough to get me to the theater to see it.
Exactly.
That's all you need to know. I mean, their posters were great for it. They were. But that one would have worked as well.
Yeah. So the script is a little bit different, the way that it does things. First of all, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I just love Rickman, how cool and calm he is, despite how badly everything is going for him at this point. No matter what, he still has some response to everything. And right then and there, whereas most villains would have just tossed it in or dove to the side, he's like, nope, I've got another play. I've got a wife right here. And it is, it's not even a question. He calmly grabs her. It's not a die for it. And I appreciate that.
Right. Okay. That's actually, that's very true. And then, so the script starts off by saying McLean's face shows his anguish. He checks the weapon he took from Uli. One bullet. Under his breath, he says, "Shit." He checks his Beretta. One bullet. He thinks. Desperate. Decides. He takes the bullet from the rifle clip, adds it to the Beretta clip. He slams the pistol clip back. Really worried, mind racing, he looks all around the room. His eyes fall on a tape dispenser. He thinks again. Steps towards it. Now, first of all, I don't like the fact how in the script they already are telling us that he puts it into his pistol. Because
yeah.
Part of the whole shock factor of seeing this for the first time is you see that he has two bullets and you think he's going to have them in his machine gun because that's what he's holding.
Especially because he's wielding it.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Of course, the villains don't know that, but we don't know that. And that's a fun part of being in the closet, which is probably why they cut that part out.
For sure. Makes sense. And then it moves to Argyle in the basement. It says, flooring the limo, Argyle crashes into the van, which careens into the wall. Theo staggers out in time for Argyle to deck him with one punch. And then Argyle looks around and says, where's the camera when you need them?
Oh, that's pretty good.
So, yeah. And then it goes back to the vault room. And Hans says to one of his minions, let's move. The last of the money is piled on. Hans hangs onto Holly while Eddie pushes the mail carts to mail money bags. Christoph goes to the door to scope their escape. Suddenly, he is cold cocked by a rifle butt. McLean steps into view in the doorway, backlit by sparks still tumbling down from the roof above. He holds the machine gun ready. Hans! Hans turns, not that surprised, grinning. He yanks Holly into view. No words need to be said. So it's very descriptive. I like it.
Yeah, I do too. It's pretty good. And they took out the one part that they needed to take out.
Yeah.
I mean, and Argyle's line, it's a funny line reading it, but he also delivers that without saying it.
Yeah.
With his grin. So it wasn't necessary. Those two little bits were unnecessary. So far all the bits that you've read too of the script, the detail of it is really fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
I haven't really looked at action ones before, so I've always been curious.
If you want, I can send you the whole file, and you can read all 120 something pages of it. If you're
interested.
I
might actually do that if you'd like to.
I don't mind. It's up to you.
Yeah.
I have the file.
I love.
You know that. That shouldn't be that difficult.
I always assumed like Michael Bay movies are just they're like 5 pages long, and they just intimate that he's just going to put explosions.
Well, I think of them, you know, like how Tolkien writes. You know, Tolkien would say, and they walked and they walked and they walked and they walked and they got to a certain place and they fought. And they fought and then they finished fighting and then they continued walking and walking and walking and walking. Now I love Tolkien's stories, but I hate the way that he writes. I can't stand his writing. I find it just too boring.
Okay. I strangely just had this conversation with someone recently too, and it was specifically Tolkien. I like the way he writes, but one of the things that, you know, I do miss out on is as you pointed out, any of the action sequences whatsoever. I explained to the person I was talking to that, yeah, in the book Helm's Deep isn't even a page long.
Right.
The Battle of Minas Tirith is like 2 pages long. That's it. And you have this extraordinary buildup to it. The rest of it's lovely and it's wonderful, but I want that payoff too. It doesn't have to go on as long as it does in the movies, which I thank Peter Jackson for realizing for us. But yeah. It's one of those things where I always get curious with people that write that. And having just written my own book where I wanted that, I have a lot of detailed action sequences. Mm-hmm. One of my chapters is literally just a fight in a basement.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's it. Like, if you're going to do it, commit. But I like reading that kind of thing. So I would really, really love to read the script. So thank you.
Okay. I will send it to you. And so basically that's what we got from the script here. So every Friday I have a segment called Weekend Surprise. Okay. We've discussed this a little bit during the course of the week, but we'll go into a little more detail. So one of the biggest controversies about Die Hard is the big question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? So what do you think, Heather? Is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? One second. And you need to show your work here. You need to explain yourself as to why. Not just it is. It needs to
give example. I mentioned L.A. Confidential earlier, and I actually argued L.A. Confidential. So this is not difficult. Lethal Weapon's also a Christmas movie. To be a Christmas movie, it can't just take place on Christmas. I mean, you can call it a Christmas movie then, but there has to be the themes. There has to be more than just a little bit of the music played in the background. But we get all of those elements here. We've got the Christmas trees. We've got the Christmas parties. We've got the Christmas music playing in the background. Everything about this kind of plays into the Christmas theme in general. It's not just it's here and it's convenient. It plays into, I mean, even in the moments at the end here, just this 1 minute clip. I mean, we had how many references to Christmas stuff?
Yeah.
The boxes, the music in the background. We had the Christmas tree topple over a couple days ago. I mean, these are all elements that come together as a whole to add the theme. And that's really what it boils down to is, does it actually work into the theme? Does it have anything to do with the story? And yes, it does have to do with the story. This is a violent Christmas story. It's not a traditional Christmas story that we're all used to, but this is a Christmas movie. And if you were going to put any, I think, action movie that is Christmas themed on the plate to argue, I think Die Hard is probably the best. I would put it before Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon, if you really wanted to argue hard that it's not, I think you could. I don't feel like you can with Die Hard.
Okay, that is fair. That is a great explanation. So thank you very much for that. So Heather, now that we're done with this week, is there anything else you want to mention about Die Hard or about the character of John McClane or something like that? Is there anything that you know, you can talk about anything that's related to the movie?
I have something personal that I may have told you about in the past. This will sound like a sad story to start, but you know, Die Hard is about a relationship that's gone awry. I'm on my second marriage. I got married very young, and we were together for about 10 years. And when we split up, I had someone recommend an attorney to me just to do all the, you know, the fun stuff. And it turned out his name was John McClane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I mentioned to him that I was really excited to have, you know, this character represent me. He had no sense of humor about it at all. He couldn't have been more deadpan. Like, oh, I've seen the movie. Yeah. Okay.
Well, at least he's seen the movie as opposed to saying, I don't know who that is. You know.
Yeah. He was a character though. And he was a fantastic attorney, but he had no sense of humor about it at all. I showed him once I had, instead of having his name in my phone, I had Yippee-ki-yay. So anytime he called me, Yippee-ki-yay would come up. It also really
wait, the sound, you'd have this, you'd have the sound clip, or it would just say Yippee-ki-yay?
Yes, I did. Yep, I had the sound clip for text anyway,
Oh, wow.
So that would pop up. Yeah, I had the nurse from the whistle from Kill Bill for my ringtone at the time. Funny. It just popped into my head. I remember now. I don't even have a ringtone on my phone because I don't like to listen to it. But yeah, it was kind of a neat, cool thing. And he didn't appreciate it, but I did. And it made the process at least somewhat funny. And I got to tell everybody, I'm like, I'm good. I've got John McClane representing me. And anybody who'd seen a good movie knew what I was.
That's right. And by any chance, was your ex's lawyer named Hans Gruber?
No. He was one of those slimy guys that it looks like he is.
Harry Ellis?
Some kind of ad.
Harry Ellis?
Yeah. I mean, he could have been any of the henchmen. That's what he looked more like. He looked like one of the henchmen.
Oh, wow.
He was terrible. Yeah, he was awful. He was always late. He was never on time. John McClane would have had no patience for that man whatsoever. Yeah. So funny, silly story.
But that's great. You'll always remember John McClane. Both of them.
I've kept him. It's been like 11, 12 years at this point, and I still have him in my phone just so I can have John McClane in my phone.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll never have to call him. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
If not, I can recommend him.
There you go. So if anyone's in Michigan and they need a good divorce attorney, you know, look for John McClane. We just did free advertising for him.
I'll have to call him just to tell him.
tell him to listen to the podcast. Tell him that in every episode his name gets mentioned.
He still wouldn't listen. Again, wonderful man, great attorney, no sense of humor at all. And me too, when I'm suffering in any way, the first thing I do is make a joke. So you can imagine all I was really dry pan jokes, and he just stared at me like, I don't understand you at all. He would not want to listen to any podcast that I was on.
Probably not. Sounds that way. All right, so Heather, you want to once again, for the final time this week, tell people how they can get in touch with Heather Baxendale.
Oh, that's right, because I should do all those fun promotional things. You can find me on all the socials. You can find me under my pen name, H.B. Walsh, on Amazon. You can find me on Amazon. You can find my book there, The Prophecy Part 1, Lost, under H.B. Walsh. Go ahead and look it up. And you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Follow me there, please. My second book, part 2, Bounty Hunters, should be out at the end of the year. And coming out soon, actually by the time the show airs, it should be out at least one or two episodes, the new podcast that I'm on with Mark Armstead, Word of Hellmouth, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast rewatch show, will be out. And I'm so super excited about it because it's one of my favorite adolescent shows.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Okay. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be listening to this show on. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. www.thefeedingtheoutsiders.com. So Heather, once again, this was such a fun week. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with everyone, to talk to me. And, you know, I haven't yet revealed what season four is. I know you know what it is. So hopefully you'll be back on season four. We'll have a fun time. We'll have some great minutes of a different movie to talk about. And we'll have to wait and see. So that'll be in a few months from now. But I look forward to having you back, Heather, and having a great discussion about a different movie besides Die Hard.
Me too. It's going to be a very good time.
That is definitely going to be one. All right. So Heather won't be back on Monday with us, but I'll be back and I'll have a new guest on Monday. So until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.